There's a complicated issue wending its way through the legislative process here in Washington, which is already complicated enough. This past week, the House of Representatives voted 354-72 in support of providing federal disaster aid for houses of worship that were damaged by Superstorm Sandy. Supporters of the bill have spoken movingly about the role these churches, mosques, and synagogues play in these devastated communities hit by the hurricane. So why on earth do Interfaith Alliance and other church-state separation advocates strongly oppose this seemingly kind-hearted effort? We need to give you an explanation about that. And here to help explain what's really at stake here is Ariel Gingold, who serves as Deputy Director for Public Policy at Interfaith Alliance. She's been on the show before. Ariel, welcome back to State of Belief.
Thank you for having me, Weldon.
Well, let's start, just in case someone doesn't have the big picture, let's start by summarizing the action that Congress took this past week.
Sure. So, in short, the House, as you said, passed a bill that changes existing FEMA policy of not granting direct grants to rebuild their facilities to houses of worship, changed that policy to explicitly state that houses of worship are eligible. The current category of organizations, nonprofit organizations that are eligible for these direct grants are those that provide essential services of a government nature. And so the bill basically says that houses of worship provide those essential services and would be eligible for those grants.
Yeah. Ariel, this same issue came up after Hurricane Katrina and Hurricane Rita along the Gulf Coast region. The same arguments were made. What happened in that situation? Did Congress change anything in those instances?
So after Hurricanes Katrina and Rita, Congress did not act to change policies. There were discussions at the administration level, and Bush administration officials said flat out that houses of worship were not and should be eligible. Yeah. I believe that some still got money, but I think it was limited to their social service organizations, yeah, to their soup kitchens, their homeless shelters, et cetera. The other important thing to note here is that houses of worship are already eligible for Small Business Administration loans, and those loans are up to $2 million. So, of course, a loan and a grant are different, mm-hmm, in nature, but they are already eligible for some assistance.
The problem in talking about this is politicians are very conscious about how they are understood and perceived even more than what they're voting on in many instances. And this sounds good. It sounds kind. It, mm-hmm, sounds compassionate. But it is unprecedented in many ways, and there are serious reasons for that. It's just a difficult time, don't you think?
It is, and it's a difficult time for the houses of worship who are in need of funding. But it's also it's the wrong time to shift policy like this. I think any time is the wrong time to make this kind of policy shift, but this is the wrong time. Mm-hmm. I don't think there ever would be a right time on this issue, because at the end of the day, though the funding might help them rebuild, it will also set them up in a bad position in terms of their religious freedom, their autonomy, the ability of clergy to be a prophetic voice, to speak, mm-hmm, truth to power. It gets harder to speak truth to power when you're also indebted to that power financially. And it would, in the end, be the wrong thing for these houses of worship. So this is an issue not just of the government not establishing religion, mm-hmm, in this way. It seems a pretty basic violation of the religion clauses of the First Amendment to, right, have Congress, to have the government building houses of worship. Mm-hmm. But it's also for the interests of the religious institutions.
The rationale that supporters of federal aid to storm-damaged houses of worship revolve around the civil purposes some of those facilities are used for. Talk a minute about the fact that in most cases, existing policies already allow disaster aid for these kinds of facilities? Because I think that's been muddled in the debate, and I think you've already alluded to it to some extent.
Absolutely. So there are two pieces worth clarifying here. The first is, as you mentioned, that many houses of worship who have social services that they provide, houses, soup kitchens, homeless shelters, things of that nature, are already eligible for disaster relief aid for those facilities. Currently, if houses of worship provide these essential government-like services and the facilities in which they provide them, more than 50% of that space is used 50%, more than 50% of the time to provide that service, then they are eligible for the aid. So this would be taking a section of a house of worship or the soup kitchen that's run in the separate building and saying not only are those eligible, which they are already, but the entire house of worship up to the cross on the top of the building, the stained glass windows, possibly even the prayer books in the house of worship. Now those are eligible as well, writ large, which puts FEMA in the position of saying what they will or will not cover, what is or is not religious, etc. And it's also inconsistent with Supreme Court precedent, two cases in particular, that say that not only can you not build and build spaces that are used for religious functions, even within larger facilities like religious schools or universities. The government can't build chapels, for example. You can't refurbish them because who knows whether the facility used today is more than not for a secular purpose. Who knows in the future if the rec room of the House of Worship will be as well.
So why do I find myself getting a little angry while you talk? I mean, I like you, but I don't like what you're saying. And let me be real clear here. Does this mean, put it right down on street level, does this mean that the people who listen to State of Belief, who really don't identify with any religion, feel very comfortable apart from religion, even an atheist listener, they're going to have to fund a program with their tax dollars that may involve the government building steeples on churches, putting bimas in synagogues, putting prayer rugs on the floor in mosques, and maybe even funding stained glass windows. Is that what that means?
That is a definite possibility. That is how this could play out. And beyond that, even people of faith, I, as a Reformed Jew, my tax dollars shouldn't support other religions, houses of worship, even other Jewish sanctuaries. I get to decide which houses of worship I support and how I support them. And that's not what our tax dollars should be spent on.
Yeah, I was going to ask, how is that not an intrusion into religion?
It does seem like an intrusion in many ways into religion, into not establishing a religion, and seems quite inconsistent with Supreme Court precedent on this as well.
So why can the people in Congress not understand that?
They're in a tricky situation, I think, in many ways, because so many of their constituents are affected. And this is an issue that is really hitting even the strictest separationists in Congress in a difficult way, because it's a matter of competing principles, caring for the people in their district as well as standing by these principles. Many members of Congress do get that. 72 no votes is significant, especially considering we had 3 days to turn this around between when the bill was introduced and when it was voted on. It didn't get a hearing. This was pretty fast-tracked. So luckily there are members of Congress who get this, but I think part of the problem is that those on the other side, advocates on the other side who are supporting this policy shift, are billing it as an issue of religious discrimination, as an issue of houses of worship and people of faith are being discriminated against by not being eligible for this funding. And that just isn't the case.
Right.
As I mentioned, there are a whole category of nonprofit organizations that are not eligible for this money. On top of that, what we're talking about here is saying that houses of worship and the services they provide are essential services that are government-like. There are many people, myself included, who would say that what houses of worship do is essential for many communities, for many people. But to say that anything that a house of worship does is government-like is a problem both legally, I think, and theologically, philosophically, because even though a house of worship may provide shelter for people, may provide food, I think you'd be hard-pressed to find any that say, any clergy, any people of faith that say they do it to be like government. They do it out of their theological beliefs. They do it out of their religious mission. Exactly. So we have some legal problems here, but we also have philosophical, religious problems here with the implications for houses of worship for saying that what they're doing is like government.
Yeah, and I mean, nobody questions the fact that a house of worship ought to give comfort in these situations. But the fact is, there are sometimes that the house of worship does its best work in the nation when it acts as a prophetic voice for the government to do more or for the government to do things a different way.
Absolutely.
And I've said this, I've used this phrase over and over to the point of being monotonous to people who know me. But when did we ever have a prophet whose salary was paid by the government speak truth to power when the power has his paycheck?
Right.
There are all kinds of things wrong here. It passed the House. What's the chance in the Senate?
The future in the Senate seems a bit unclear. There has not been a bill introduced yet. We're figuring out what the timing would be. Mostly the path forward seems unclear. The rules in the Senate are different. Vote processes are different. So we're talking to allies in the Senate. We're trying to get a sense of what the future would be. But hopefully this will not move forward.
So if it didn't move forward, it would just die?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Unless now, there's some sort of action from the administration, or unless FEMA changes their policy, which all indications have been that FEMA, who would have to administer these policy changes, are not eager to make these changes and do understand the implications for any kind of policy shift in this way.
Okay. Now, this needs to be an answer shorter than it deserves. Tell us about what you as a policy person at the Interfaith Alliance is doing to bring an understanding of the risk of the case for federal funding to houses of worship.
Great. So we met extensively with and spoke over the phone with members of Congress's staff about the implications for religious freedom. And we're really trying to focus in these conversations with the House, with the Senate, on the harm to religion. We've also had many, many members of Interfaith Alliance, hundreds and hundreds of members, write to their elected officials, also conveying this message. We send a letter to the whole House last week. Mm-hmm. We're prepared to send one up to the Senate when the time comes. And we're really trying to get folks in the Northeast who are affected by the impact of Superstorm Sandy to weigh in as well. Some have already done so. Reverend Mark Lukens, clergy member in New York who also is a leader of an Interfaith Alliance affiliate up there, spoke very eloquently in NPR about the harm to him as a clergy member and to his church by taking any federal aid. So we're trying to really spread that message.
Ariel Gingold is Deputy Director for Public Policy at Interfaith Alliance. I'm always happy when our listeners can benefit from the expertise in our office. Ariel is a really fine worker and understands this issue as a few others do. And I want to thank her for briefing us today on State of Belief Radio. I also want to encourage you, if you want to know more about this issue and what's being done on it, to write to Ariel at Interfaith Alliance. So before you say thank you, tell them how to reach you with that and then say thank you.
Absolutely. You could reach me by emailing me at policy@interfaithalliance.org. And I do hope, especially if you're in the Northeast, we'd love to hear from you on this issue. So thank you for having me.
And thanks to you, Ariel.